This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. In June of 1944, shortly after the Allies landed at Normandy, the International Red Cross visited a ghetto and concentration camp in what was then Czechoslovakia, a camp called Terezin. The delegation was shown a carefully crafted lie, a Nazi-created diorama showing prisoners treated in relative comfort, the streets lined with fresh plantings and newly painted homes. A ghetto, but one which encouraged and supported a rich cultural life, complete with a performance venue and newly created works of classical music. Some 30,000 Jews died at Terezin under horrible conditions masked by the Nazis during that Red Cross visit. Many thousands more were sent to the gas chambers at Auschwitz. And while few of the residents of Terezin would survive the Holocaust, their voices, their plays and poems and operas created and performed there live on. The Voices of Terezin is a series of performances and lectures and films that's running all month at Keene State College. Among those speaking, Mark Ludwig. He's a scholar on music and the Holocaust and a member of the Boston Symphony Orchestra, also executive director and founder of the Terezin Music Foundation. And Mark, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
So that piece we were just listening to, it was made to accompany a German propaganda film. Can you describe the scene that it accompanied?
Well, it's a work by Pavel Haas, who before the war was considered one of the prize pupils of Leos Janáček. So this is one of the up-and-coming major figures on the classical music scene. He wrote what was called The Study for String Orchestra. Just to clarify, he wrote that just as a composer, not just for the film. In fact, the Nazis co-opted that piece, among others, for use in the propaganda film. And when you look at the fragments that have survived of that propaganda film and listen to the narration, it cuts into a narration saying basically the work of a Jewish musician, of a Jewish composer, is being performed in Theresienstadt. And you see the musicians, you see audience members, and of course, this was nothing like the reality of being a prisoner in Terezin. And they perform this piece, and there's a little snippet, and then they show the composer taking a bow. And of course, months later, on the final series of transports to Auschwitz, Pavel Haas, with many of the musicians that appeared in that propaganda film, went directly to the gas chambers.
So what was the Nazi agenda in showing this flourishing, creative community at Terezin?
Well, look into context of World War II, where things were going. Clearly, the war was going in the favor of the Allies, and now this was basically a way to dispel word of the final solution and the deprivation and death that it was occurring in the concentration camps. So this was, in a sense, the paradise ghetto. And it was used as a propaganda vehicle, not only just as a film, but they also prepared for a Red Cross International Committee visit.
This visit, like Pyongyang today, there are sometimes international monitors that go in. Terezin was designed to create this kind of illusion of relative prosperity. But what were conditions really like there?
Well, imagine a garrison town before World War II that had approximately a population of 7,500 people. And as a concentration camp, Terezin actually had a peak prison population of over 63,000, all in the same facilities. These were not expanded facilities. You're looking at an environment of deep deprivation, starvation, lack of adequate medical care. The fact that over 30,000 people in that concentration camp alone died. And then on top of that, the existence of uncertainty, not knowing when one or one's loved ones would be placed on a transport to the East.
Prisoners there published a magazine. They wrote poetry, their children's drawings. There was even a jazz band called the Ghetto Swingers. So were prisoners forced to create works by the Nazis, or were these just expressions made in response to the horror of the camps?
No, actually, I will give you another way to look at it, which is very inspiring to us Imagine people who are sent on a transport, and you have to think in the context of what was life like for Jews in throughout occupied Europe. And under the Nuremberg racial laws, for example, Jews were no longer allowed to own musical instruments. And there's a whole list of horrible restrictions, but I'm just going to focus on that for a moment. So you're no longer allowed to own an instrument, and yet there were people who kept them and then smuggled them into the camp at great peril, great risk. So imagine, how would you, for example, smuggle a cello in? And there's one story where the instrument was cut into pieces and put into the lining of several coats, brought into the camp and then glued back together. So initially, performances that were given in the barracks, these were really, you know, ad hoc performances, were done in a secretive manner in the attics and basements of the barracks. And when they were discovered by the Nazis initially saw this as an effective means of keeping the population, the prison population, under control. So there was always the threat of revoking the privileges, so to speak, of cultural activities. Then over time, the Nazis co-opted it and forced the prisoners to participate in really the propaganda projects of, well, what we just spoke about, the propaganda film, and of course, the International Red Cross visits.
Let's hear something else composed while at Terezin. This is Brundibar. It's a children's opera composed by Hans Krause, which was performed more than 50 times at Terezin. So let's hear a clip from, this is a 2007 recording from Act 1, Scene 1, performed by the Orchestra Giovanili Gams Ensemble. And during those many performances, who was in the audience? Was it the Nazis?
No, you know, just to backtrack a moment, that piece, which was originally composed for a Jewish orphanage in Prague, almost all those children, as well as the composer, were sent to Terezin. What the composer, Hans Krause, did, he actually put together a new score, if you will, for whatever instruments were available in the camp. This was done initially for the children. You have to think about the power of culture, what the role it played in this camp. So throughout my research over the years, I would actually look through some of the medical records. You'll find that the more you know about Terezin, it's quite a surrealistic place in that here you had some of the greatest creative and scientific minds of Europe imprisoned in this camp, all because they were Jewish. And in a camp of great deprivation and horrible medical facilities, juxtapose that with having some of the greatest scientific and medical minds of Europe. So they're faced with, of all things, early on when the prisoners are coming in, a high suicide rate. And what was the means in which to try to stem that rate? It was cultural activity, engaging the prisoners either to participate in or experience readings, songs. So the power of music was just an amazing vehicle. So now think about the children. The children, as Jewish children, they're prohibited by the Nazis to be educated. So secretly, these children had to be educated in the camps, and also they had to be engaged. You had to engage their minds. Brundibar is one of those unbelievable stories where the children were so engaged. There's a slight change in the ending of this Brundibar in the libretto where the children sing, you know, we sang our song, we won the victory over the tyrant mean. So Brundibar, the arch villain, really becomes so metaphoric for Hitler. And here are these children singing this. And when you look at this film clip, it breaks your heart because as you're looking at these children who are singing and then at the camera pans into the audience filled with children, you realize that after the production of this film, most of those children went into the gas chambers of Auschwitz.
We're We're speaking with Mark Ludwig. He's a scholar on music and the Holocaust and a member of the Boston Symphony Orchestra and executive director and founder of the Terezin Music Foundation. He's going to be lecturing on December 1st at Kane State College as part of the Voices of Terezin series. Well, Mark, you researched this work, you performed this work. What does that feel like, you know, seeing these works recreated, even performing them yourselves, when you know the story behind them?
Well, I take a real pride in the fact, and I feel really blessed that, one, I have had the opportunity to research and be part of recovering this musical legacy. But for me, what has become so important beyond my passion for this music is looking at the history of what did the arts mean to the children and the adults, how it helped them to cope and survive, and the messages that they give us, and show us just how important culture is in our lives today. And not only in enriching our lives, but to challenge us. I mean, needless to say, we're living in very challenging times. And in this case, art is not frivolous. Art is not just pure entertainment. Art is there to challenge. Art is there to transform and to inspire. You know, when you think back, like we talked about Pavel Haas, and I mentioned to you a few minutes ago, here was this, you know, up-and-coming composer. He was really the successor to Leos Janacek. And you could say that about several other composers who were incarcerated in Terezin. Could you imagine if they had lived another 30, 40 years, not only the music they would have composed, but the next generation or two of composers and artists and the people that they could have inspired and influenced. So we're, in a sense, we're trying to graft their legacy onto to our tree, if you will, of cultural activity and creativity.
You will be speaking on December the 1st about the legacy of one particular composer and conductor, Victor Ullmann. One of his final works, The Emperor of Atlantis, or Death Abdicates, which was never performed at the camp. Let's hear just a clip of a recent 1994 recording of Ullmann's The Emperor of Atlantis. This is conducted by Holderlin Lieder. Mark, nearly all of the artists, poets, and musicians at Terezin, including Ullmann, were sent to the gas chambers at Auschwitz. How is it that so much of their works created there were preserved?
Well, in the case of Ullmann, here was a man that just before going on the transport to Auschwitz was convinced by a friend to leave his manuscripts. So could you imagine if he had decided, which would have been quite natural, to have taken it with him, they would have been lost. So we're quite fortunate that a lot of these works were left in Terezin by the composers. And then you have a body of their music that was composed before the war. Some of it survived, and then, of course, some of it has been lost.
For Ullmann, though, the time at Terezin was perhaps his most prolific period. So what does this story of Terezin tell us about art and the human condition and the persistence of that creative spirit?
I think it, on one level, just shows us how vital culture is for all of us as human beings. You know, if you think in the context of trying to place yourself in the shoes of somebody being sent on a transport to Terezin, where you're allowed to bring only up to, say, if you can, 100 pounds of goods, whatever you can carry, all right? So what would you, just put yourself in that position for a moment. You would probably take some food, you would certainly take clothing, but then you see that people smuggle in instruments. All right, they bring in music, they bring in art supplies, that it shows culture is just so important and vital to their survival. Just as important as breathing, eating, sleeping, that, you know, without that, there is no hope. Was bleibt uns armer Welt zuteil, wir bieten uns auf den Jahrmarkt frei.
Mark Ludwig, a scholar on music and the Holocaust, member of the BSO, and executive director and founder of the Terezin Music Foundation, thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Mark is going to be lecturing at Keene State College as part of their commemorative series, The Voices of Terezin, on December the 1st. There's also a film screening and a panel discussion that very evening, and you can find a full list of the upcoming events at wordofmouthradio.org.